I feel like a lot of scholarships have a very like hard, you need like an A plus average in order to apply. It's like, okay, well, you know, not everyone is able to get this because again, people have to work and then they have to take time from their studies. So I think that's definitely a huge barrier too.
Science is awesome. It's fascinating, it sparks curiosity, and it's the reason most of us are alive today. But sometimes it sucks, from applying to funding, to spending hours in the lab, to lack of representation in many science fields. On this podcast, we talk about the ins and outs of scientific research and how it impacts our lives. Welcome to Science Sucks. I'm Evie, neuroscientist, science communicator, proud owner of a glow-in-the-dark night sky tapestry, and host of the Science Sucks radio show and podcast. Welcome to episode 27 of the show. This week, we're chatting with Kelsey Dirksen. She did her bachelor's in aerospace engineering at Carleton University and just wrapped up her master's in electrical and computer engineering at the University of Western Ontario. For her master's, she studied space weather. And if you're wondering, what the heck is space weather? Well, I got you covered. In this interview, I asked the weird questions, so you don't have to. Just a few days after our interview, Kelsey hopped on a plane to California to start her internship as a NASA engineer. No big deal. And not only is Kelsey an engineer at NASA, but I actually found her when I asked on Twitter if anyone would be comfortable talking about finances in grad school. Here's why this topic is so important to talk about. So grad students, aka people doing their master's or PhD degrees, are the core of scientific research and knowledge. I don't know if you know this, but many Nobel Prizes go to scientists for the work they did as grad students. For people doing literal life-changing research, grad students aren't paid a lot. And Kelsey tackles this issue head on in her blog, The Poor Grad Student. She shares honest stories about the reality of grad school finances. If you're not a grad student, here's a bit about how the system works. When you first go to university, you'll probably get a bachelor's degree first. This degree you have to pay for unless you live in a place where tuition is free. And yes, there are lots of those places. So a bachelor's degree is something that you pay for. A graduate degree, like a master's or a PhD, is different. So in Canada, you're paid an annual stipend to do that degree, which is kind of like an annual salary. Stipends vary across institutions, but here in Canada, I've seen stipends in the range of, say, $18,000 or $26,000 a year. But that's not the actual amount a grad student would get. They might have to subtract a few thousand dollars for tuition. They might be required to work a certain number of hours as a teaching assistant to even get that full amount of money. And on the other hand, a student might be fortunate to get extra funding from awards and get paid more than their stipend. So while the numbers vary, one thing is for sure, grad students are tragically underpaid for the important work they do. And on her blog, Kelsey gets real about the numbers. She tells you how much she makes, what her expenses are, and how she discusses money with her partner who makes a lot more money than her. Y'all, this is the real money talk we've been waiting for. So strap in and blast off for this episode. Let's hear from NASA engineer and money blogger, Kelsey Dirksen.
Okay, so hi, my name is Kelsey Dirksen, and I just actually defended my thesis 2 days ago as of the recording of this podcast. So I am now a master's of electrical and computer engineering at the University of Western Ontario. Yeah, super happy to be finished. And I study space weather, but specifically machine learning related to space weather. So I do lots of computer programming and research related to atmospheric science and things like that. And I get to work with the Paris Observatory, which is really cool. So I get to travel to Paris a couple times a year, which is really nice. A good excuse to go to Europe. My journey to science, I mean, I've always really loved science. Even when I was tiny and like just beginning to walk, I was always interested in doing like science experiments. I would cut up like different types of fruit and vegetables and leave them on the counter and like record the changes every hour. And my mom was super encouraging of that. So that was nice to have encouraging parents. But yeah, even in elementary school, always really, really interested in science. It was always my favorite class. I had a really great science teacher as well, who was super passionate about what he taught and what he did. And he would always make up kind of like these extra projects for me to work on because he knew I was interested. So I definitely attribute a lot of my continued science interest to him. I think having like a teacher like that is super important. And yeah, since I was maybe like 9 or 10, I wanted to be an astronaut. So I kind of just was like, well, science/engineering is a good way to go about that. And I did my undergrad degree in aerospace engineering because I thought it was probably something that astronauts do. And then now I'm doing electrical and computer engineering, and I just like learning and I like space. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Wow. A lot of people want to be astronauts as kids, but you followed through.
Yeah. I hear that a lot. Yeah. I figure, I mean, like, it's like any other job, right? Someone has to do it. So I'm like, well, why not? Why can't I do it? So yeah, I just finished my degree and I'm about to start at NASA Jet Propulsion Lab on Monday. So in like 4 days.
Exciting. Is that your dream? Is that like something you've wanted to do for a long time?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, NASA, you always, especially as like Canadians, we're so close to the States. So we're always like, oh my God, NASA's amazing. I want to go there. That's like the dream, ultimate goal. And still for sure, it's 100% dream come true to be able to do an internship there. And especially as a non-American, like it's super hard to get in, just finding ways around visas and things like that. So I'm super thankful to be able to go. I'm really excited.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you did your undergrad in engineering and your master's as well.
Yep. So I did aerospace engineering for an undergrad degree at Carleton University, which is in Ottawa. And I did my master's in, like I mentioned before, electrical and computer engineering related to space and satellites and stuff like that at Western University. And awesome. Now I'm at NASA.
Oh, cool. And you mentioned space weather. What is space weather?
So space weather, I mean, you could think of it like the same thing as how we have on Earth. Like it's rainy some days, it's sunny some days. Space weather is basically any sort of weather that happens in the near space environment. So specifically, I look at what are called interplanetary coronal mass ejections, which essentially are big explosions on the sun, and they send these high energy particles towards Earth. And when it reaches the Earth, it causes the density of the atmosphere, so the total number of particles in the atmosphere, to increase. And this can cause satellites to move around, and this can cause like possible collisions and things like that. So I look at those storms and try to understand and detect them through my research work. Yeah.
Wow. So I feel like it's so hard to think of weather without, you know, water, clouds, you know, what we see on Earth. But it is very similar, just with different elements.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, the concept, I guess you could relate it to, is these big explosions on the sun. It almost causes the satellites to be pushed around. Like they actually call it solar wind. So it's, mm-hmm. You can think of it like these satellites are being blown around by these big explosions on the sun. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and a lot of satellites are doing important stuff.
Even yes, like, exactly.
Even like GPS and things like that we use every day.
Exactly, yeah, and they're all affected, and there's no real way to stop these storms from happening or really like protect your satellite from them. So it's just trying to learn about what are the effects of these types of big storms caused by the sun and how we can kind of mitigate and account for them, because they're going to happen and we can't stop them. So it's best to like learn about how we can prepare for them and, you know, what to do when these things happen.
Yeah, keep people safe, budget for them.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
Cool. And so you mentioned you chose your field because you always wanted to be an astronaut. And yeah, is there anything that caused you to pursue kind of this niche, like this job at JPL or this space weather in particular?
It's kind of been just a random, very convoluted path, honestly. I decided to do electrical and computer engineering because I thought it was the most difficult part of my undergrad. So I was like, okay, if I can do elec, then I can probably do anything, honestly, because I find it really, like, I just found it super interesting, but also just really, like, conceptually difficult. Like, even the idea of, like, electrons are, like, mind-blowing to me still, so I thought that would be interesting to learn about. And I actually got an internship at the Paris Observatory kind of randomly. I I went to a short course at the observatory 2 years ago on a whim after graduating, and I ended up meeting my now supervisors who basically I emailed them and asked, can I come to Paris and work for you? And they were like, sure, yeah, come down. We're always, you're Canadian. It's pretty easy to get a visa. Like, that sounds good. So I spent the last summer in Paris working at the observatory, and that's where I got introduced to space weather and these types of, you know, coronal mass ejection events and things like that. So I really had no idea about them until last summer, and my thesis kind of just came out of that internship, and I've just been working with the observatory ever since. They're super, super friendly people. They came to visit me last winter and like saw a Canadian winter, which was really fun. They had like never seen snow. So yeah, it's kind of just been a random convoluted path that way. And to JPL, it's also a bit complicated, I guess. So I'm doing machine learning, which is basically teaching a computer what data looks like through coding. And JPL has a machine learning group, and my supervisor had funding to send a couple students, and so I told him I wanted to go, and I finished my thesis on time so I could go. So it was kind of like a joint project through Western, but you still had to apply to the Jet Propulsion Lab. So I'm not doing anything at JPL that's actually related to space weather. Actually, I'm doing things more related to planetary science and like rover applications for like Mars rovers and things like that. But honestly, I'll do anything at NASA. I'll do any job, so it doesn't matter. So yeah, I'm just interested in space. So I'll just do whatever at this point.
Yeah, take what life throws your way.
Exactly.
Amazing. That's so, so mind-blowing. Really cool. Yeah. And speaking of like space and planetary science and, you know, astronomy in general, do you have any myths or misconceptions you want to bust about it?
I guess the only thing, so my supervisor at Western, he is not a space weather guy. He doesn't know anything about space weather. So when I was telling him about my thesis ideas, he thought that because space is a vacuum, that there's no way that there could be like wind, or that, you know, there can be particles in space. So I guess the only misconception I've ever run into is that no, space is not completely a vacuum, and there are still, you know, oxygen and nitrogen and other elements up there, and even satellites can experience drag, which if you've ever, you know, walked around on a windy day and it's quite difficult, you're experiencing drag. So yeah, that's the only real misconception. I'm quite new to the field relatively of space weather, but that's the only one I've had to clear up thus far.
I feel like myths and misconceptions, people feel like, oh, I'm so dumb, I didn't know that. It's like, no, a lot of people have these myths.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Especially when you get super into a specific field and you're kind of tunnel visioned and you don't realize, you know, other fields. And yeah, no, I mean, there's no dumb questions. It's fine.
That's me as hosting this podcast. I'm like, tell me, what does this mean?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's the best way to learn.
Next, we get into talking about Kelsey's blog, the poorgradstudent.home.blog. This is a deep dive into the reality of money in grad school. Now, money can be a difficult and sensitive topic, so I acknowledge that we're talking about our own experiences, which might be very different from yours. My hope is that by talking openly about the challenges and honest numbers surrounding money, we can help raise each other up. So let's dive in.
So it's a bit of a, I guess, a passion project. I started it last January. I had been talking with my boyfriend a lot about it because he knows I'm very passionate about personal finance and budgeting and things like that. But really it was because I'm very interested in budgeting and personal finance and things like that. I always have been, and I haven't found really anywhere online or any kind of self-help books or anything like that that were speaking to people in my position. So not only, I mean, the word poor, you need to definitely consider that language is important, and there's a difference between being broke and being poor, and I recognize that for sure. I think growing up in the financial situation I've been throughout my life, I can kind of, those the worlds have been blurred, but I think I'm more on the side of where, you know, I don't come from a lot of money. I've had to have, you know, multiple jobs since I was 13 years old. I had to pay for school the whole way through. I had to take out loans. I haven't even thought about, you know, touching my loans yet. I'm still struggling to get through grad school. And I think a lot of people are in that position too. And I just haven't really found anything online or in, you know, books or things like that, that really spoke to people like me, where it's not really a matter of like saving for a rainy day or saving for a retirement. Like as grad students, we're just trying to make sure we can, you know, buy groceries while also buying the textbooks that we need, while also paying our rent and our bills and things like that. So I just felt that there was definitely a gap in the kind of financial advice world for people like myself, where we're super passionate about what we do. And, you know, we love learning and we're working really hard. And it's not a matter of we're not working hard enough. It's just, you know, how much grad students get paid is really low. And yeah, it's just trying to give as much advice as I can. I've been really lucky to been able to get conference funding and be able to be funded to do these types of internships. So I try to give advice onto how you can do that. My boyfriend and I are in a long distance relationship. We've been in long distance for over 2.5 years. So just talking about, you know, dating someone as a grad student when they have a full-time job, like just things like that, that people maybe aren't talking about. I've talked a lot about the amount of money that I make, exact numbers and exact amount of debt I have. And I don't really feel any shame around it because I don't see the point of feeling shame around it. I mean, I'm pursuing my passion, which is hopefully becoming an astronaut or becoming at least involved in the space industry in some way. And I feel like I can just share, and if more people share advice about what it is to be a grad student and how to survive, then it'll help everyone. So yeah, that was kind of the me rambling about it, but that's what I try to do.
I'm like jumping in my seat. I'm like, yes, 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 yes. I think more people need to talk about it. Cause if you don't, everyone's like, I guess I'm the only one struggling with this, and you feel
exactly.
Very alone.
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, it's been on the back burner the past few months because I've been finishing my thesis, but now that I'm done, I'm excited to kind of get into more things, more topics and things like that. I've talked a bit about, so I did mention, I talked a bit about, you know, what it's like to date someone who makes a lot more money than you. I mean, because as a grad student, for example, I think my funding is around like between $13,000 to $16,000 a year, which is, I mean, like, compared to someone that's a full-time software engineer who I'm dating, it's just incomparable. So it's kind of like talking about how we kind of navigate that and how we're just honest and open about, like, you know, what you can contribute to the relationship financially and things like that. So I want to write one. I'm thinking about writing one about the actual costs of being a long distance relationship, because even just like traveling and time and, you know, things like that, I took the VIA in between London, Ontario and Ottawa, which is like, you know, almost $300 round trip. It's crazy. So yeah, just trying to give people some advice, and the feedback's been really good. I've actually been really, really surprised. Honestly, I've had a lot of people that, from people I went to high school and I haven't heard from for years, or people I went to university with but have kind of lost touch, message me and like thank me for sharing numbers and asking for advice about things. So that's been really honestly surprising, but I was really happy about that, because I was definitely nervous to share numbers for sure, because I think this is with anyone in social media, that they post like kind of like the highlights and like, yeah, look what I'm doing. I have this degree now and I'm going to do this internship. But when you look at the numbers, it's like, I mean, I'm also drowning in student debt, so not everything is, you know, perfect. And so it's hard to admit, but I think it's, you know, it just helps everyone to see the reality of the choices that you make as well. Because I don't think there's anything wrong with taking, you know, a break and working and then coming back to a master's or something like that. It's totally up to you. But yeah, just trying to be helpful.
It's so helpful. I think in the end, like, we all talk about our jobs and our careers, and like, a lot of us are very driven to like just go. But in the end, we're all like human beings with needs and worries. And so that really taps into that part of us, right? Like, we all have financial stress. We all need you know, community, and we all like need to share in these experiences. So
definitely,
I feel like you're setting up a space where people can talk about it. Like, people message you and they're like, I struggled with money too. I'm also in grad school. So that they can build community.
Yeah, I hope so. Because, I mean, we're all, if you're in a master's or a PhD position, you're likely to be, you know, you're not making the most money. You're definitely not, unless you have some sort of outside scholarship or something like that. So it's just, it helps everyone just to talk about it and, you know, share like resources in terms of like, oh, apply to this scholarship or this grant or this, yeah, you know, so-and-so, and how to approach asking for more money from your supervisor and things like that. Cause at the end of the day, we're also trying to live our lives as well, not just be research monkeys.
Talking about it is the first step. Cause you always hear about these stories about women in high level executive positions that find out they're like male coworkers making so much more money than them for the same job. And like, they didn't find out until they talked about it.
Yes, exactly.
It's always the first step.
Yeah. No, that's how I found out for, I asked he's a postdoc, but he's at the same university as me. And I asked him like, how much should I be like, what's the maximum I could be making as a, you know, a master's student at the school? Like, can I ask for more money? So, and he was like, yeah, this is how much I got paid. So we just were pretty open about it. And that's how I ended up approaching my supervisor after that conversation and just being frank about it. Like, look, I need more money. I can work, increase my TA hours or something, but I just need to be higher compensation just because it's not working.
Yeah, like of course.
Yeah. Because it's also, right, you can't, it's hard because if you're doing some sort of thesis-based research, you can't exactly get a part-time job, or maybe you can, but then your research suffers because now you're spending a lot of time and energy, you know, working part-time somewhere, which if you have the time, that's fantastic. I did that in my undergrad, but I just found with other commitments in school, I was not able to in a master's. And even then, it really, you don't realize how much of a disadvantage you're at until people that don't have to work, you know, how much more free time they have to volunteer. And then, okay, now their CVs look a lot better because they have all these volunteer positions because they didn't have to work because they have enough money, and it just kind of snowballs that way. So yeah, it's been a journey, but I hope I've been able to give useful advice and advice that you can take into not just grad school, but just your general life as well.
Of course, yeah. And what are some, for people who are listening who are not in grad school or are considering grad school or maybe are in the States or Australia or somewhere else where the systems are different, like what are some problems that you think are unique to grad students? I definitely know, you know, the low pay, the low stipend, things like conferences, I know, like you have to pay out of pocket a lot of the time for travel and wait to get reimbursed for months. So these kind of problems.
Yeah, that's definitely a big one, is the reimbursement thing. That's huge. I think I'm waiting right now on like almost $5,000 of reimbursements, which is crazy. Like, I'm only getting paid again like $13,000 a year. So this is like insane to be waiting that long. So that's definitely a huge one. I am looking into applying to United States for a PhD, and I didn't realize how expensive it was as well. I don't think I had any application fees being a Canadian and paying for applying to master's schools or master's programs. Mm-hmm. But for the States, I mean, I'm earning the GRE, and that was $300 Canadian to sign up.
Oh my
goodness.
Then
it's another $100 to send the test to a school. It's another $100 to pay to apply to the school. And that's like $500 just to one university. So that is absolutely insane, super inaccessible. I think they do have some programs for, if you are from the United States, you can kind of get some of those fees waived, which is really good. But for myself, I have to pay all of it. So that's definitely something that's a huge barrier, I would say, for sure. And yeah, that's definitely a big one. I think also kind of the scholarships, they're definitely lacking, I would say. I don't know. I try to apply to the ones I can, but it depends. I think scholarships should also focus not only on GPA, but also on like community involvement and volunteering and kind of extracurricular work, which they definitely do. But I feel like a lot of scholarships have a very like hard, you need like an A+ average in order to apply. It's like, okay, well, you know, not everyone is able to get this because, again, people have to work and then they have to take time from their studies. So I think that's definitely a huge barrier too. I'm lucky that our school or Western, you can work part-time if you have to, but I know a lot of universities, a part of your contract, you can't even get a part-time job if you're a master's student, which is crazy. So you just have to kind of stick with the funding that you're given.
They limit your hours sometimes. Like, I know I've heard that, that you can only work like 10 extra hours a week or some. I've heard of limits like that.
That's crazy too. Yeah, I would say that's a big barrier, but definitely the biggest one that I've had to deal with is reimbursements for sure. I think, so I have an award for a conference that I went to, but I don't get the reimbursement until next semester. It's like, okay, well, I mean, rent is due like 2 days ago, so what am I gonna do?
Yeah. It's literally like it seems like an impossible system, and it's possible, but very difficult and more stressful for people who already are otherwise marginalized, whether it's like financial and other things.
Exactly. Yeah, I've seen my one thing I've seen that was pretty shocking for I don't know how they just advertise this and no one is like, wait, what? The university offering food stamps for grad students because they can't afford groceries. Like, that's just crazy to me that you're pursuing this higher education degree and you're doing this like cutting edge research, and then your school is offering you food stamps because they're not going to pay you enough so you could buy groceries. Like, that is just I don't know, it's a crazy world, but I'm trying to give at least some advice to make it through it, because on the other side I've heard there's jobs, so
I have heard.
Yeah,
I know that engineering, I always hear, has great jobs. I have heard.
Mm-hmm.
I have a background in psychology and neuroscience, so it's very kind of random. It's not as direct as I would say engineering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely depends what you want to get into. Space, I would say, is quite difficult in Canada. There's definitely jobs for sure. I know people that are working the Canadian Space Agency and other companies, but it's definitely when you're super specific at what you want to do, it's always going to be challenging, but it's worth it. We're young. We have time to follow our dreams.
I need that written on my wall. We're young. We have time to follow our dreams. It doesn't take away from the seeming impossible system that grad students have to swim through, but it's nice to hear that we are a work in progress. Next up, I asked Kelsey for any money podcasts, YouTube channels, and other resources she would recommend to budgeting newbies like me.
Definitely. One of the ones I really like is called Bad with Money. Perfect. Yeah, I love Gabby Dunn. I love Just Between Us, which is like their YouTube channel, right? So yeah, Bad with Money is amazing because she, again, is super frank. She goes into all of the like ins and outs of the financial systems related to people within the LGBTQ community, people of color. She like dives deep into all that stuff and all the issues related to mostly American systems, but super, super informative. I really, really like that podcast. Another one to YouTube series, or I guess YouTube channel, is called The Financial Diet. That's another really good one too. Yeah,
I love them too. A YouTube channel, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's great too. The like host of that. She went to community college. I don't even think she finished. Maybe she did or not. But she lives in New York City and kind of talks about like the best ways to navigate living there on a budget, and is again super frank about money. So I like that. I don't need no sugarcoating. I just want to tell me like it is, please, and this will help.
A lot of money advice is from like rich older men who are like,
yes, exactly.
Like, oh, I had a six-figure salary, and then I realized there's more to life, and I was like. And then I like lived on an island and I'm like, I don't understand.
Yeah, like this is not accessible to me in any way.
So I appreciate like younger people who are frank and like acknowledge that the system is often flawed.
Exactly.
So the next step for you is to move to California. So like, what are you looking forward to about it?
Definitely just the whole experience, trying to soak up as much as possible. I'm only there until the end of the year, so really just trying to take advantage of every possible opportunity while I'm there and meeting all the cool people that work at NASA, whoever that might be, scientists, engineers, admin people, anyone really, just want to talk to people there. I'm actually going to try. I don't know if this is possible, but the data that I used for my thesis is from a NASA mission. So I want to try to reach out to the scientist a part of that mission, see if, because I know that they do work at JPL, and see if, grab a coffee and things like that. So I'm just going to try to meet as many people as I can and learn as much as possible while I'm there and maybe secure a job. I don't know if it's possible, but we'll see for the long term.
Do you eventually want to be an astronaut? Is that like a potential goal?
Yeah, that would still be definitely the potential goal. I don't think I'm not as actively like it's not my be all end all because I don't think it's I've heard from a lot of astronauts who I've asked at like meet and greets and things like that, what's the best like approach to becoming one? And like consistently their advice is don't put everything in like your world and all of your work towards the end goal of only astronaut. You want to find things that you love and you're passionate about and then, apply when the opportunity comes, but don't just focus just on that. So I've tried to shift my focus on more on thinking about like what related to space research makes me happy and makes me, want to continue doing the work I do. So I'm kind of shifting gears, I guess, into more Earth observation and I guess space missions more related to Earth. Just because I want the work I do to be impactful to the people here. So I'm trying to figure out a way to fit that in a space career. So I definitely, of course, still want to be an astronaut, actively working towards doing that. But I think in some ways, trying to figure out the best way to work in the space field while still being able to positively impact the world in a way that I can visually see, ideally.
Yeah, yes, that is amazing. I think it there's a lot of like misconceptions about how space is, why are we going to space if we have so many problems here? But you can really help people on Earth with the research that's done through space programs.
Yeah, exactly, totally. I still am interested in like communications and kind of like connecting the world that way as well because I think it's super, super important. I was able to work a couple summers ago in Northern Labrador and like the Inuit and Innu communities there, and communication was like a huge issue for them because they just don't have the infrastructure. So kind of I mean, it hits close to home for us in Canada because Canada's so large and there's so many people in different areas that are hard to reach.
Kelsey mentioned not focusing on a single dream, like becoming an astronaut, but also focusing on similar jobs you'll love as well. That's such good advice for really any career path. You can't just wait for your one dream job. It helps to have more than one dream job while you work towards the big one. So next I asked Kelsey who inspires her.
Definitely Commander Chris Hadfield, like the biggest for sure. Huge inspiration. I've met him a couple times. The first time, I think I cried literally for half an hour after I met him. So I was just like so starstruck. No pun intended there, but I mean, for me, and I'm sure like a lot of other Canadians, anyone interested in space, he's just like an icon for all of us. And most recently, honestly, in the past like couple years, as I've started to be able to do like different conferences and things like that, it's been like a lot of women in the space field. I used to feel super competitive, not just with women, but just with other people that I found out wanted to be astronauts. But honestly, lately, everyone's on their own path, everyone's doing their own thing. And the more people that are, learning and being open-minded about education and space research and things like that, the better. So I've really just been taking things from the different people I'm meeting and just been inspired of the other women I've been meeting in the past couple of years and just trying to learn as much as I can from them. And yeah, that's just it's everyone does better if we just encourage one another. So that's what I've been feeling inspired by lately.
Yes, of course. And everyone's on a slightly different path, so you can help each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no room for me to worry about that in a competitive way. I want everyone's doing their own thing and no two people are the same. So it's just better to just encourage everyone and learn from people. And yeah, I think it's just everyone will do better that way.
Yes, I love that. And do you have any advice for aspiring young women in STEM or people who want to go into your field?
Definitely. Just because you don't like math doesn't mean you can't be an engineer, first of all. I did not like math until honestly ever actually I don't think I still like math really, but when it's applied to certain things, it's a lot more interesting. So yeah, don't be afraid of, you know, just because you're not good at math right away, or that you think that, you know, science is difficult, that you can't do it. That's totally not the case. I think I got like a 60 in grade 10 math, and I have an aerospace engineering degree, so it's okay. You can do it. It's fine. That's definitely one thing. But for women especially, like, don't be afraid to be proud of your accomplishments and, you know, brag about yourself and champion yourself and other women as well. And I've had a lot of great mentors. I've been really lucky to have some really great people in my life. None specifically women, honestly, related to STEM. I haven't really had any like teachers or anything like that. I've only had one female professor, actually, I think, in my two engineering degrees that taught math one time. So that's definitely been lacking. So we need more women, please. Please, if you're interested, go into STEM. But yeah, just, you know, champion yourself and champion other women, and don't be afraid to pursue whatever you want to pursue. I mean, it doesn't have to be STEM either. It could be any field. It could be art, it could be business, whatever you want to do, but just don't be afraid just because it's not easy right away. That's okay.
And where can people find you, learn more about your cool science adventures?
I'm mostly active on Twitter. So my Twitter is spacecadet_Kels. That's where, yeah, I post most of my things. If anyone listening to this is going to the International Astronautical Congress in DC this year, I will be there. So I'll be organizing some events with the Space Generation Advisory Council, but also be around the whole week as well. So if anyone's there, love to meet anyone in the space world.
Awesome. When is that?
It is from October 20th to the 26th, I believe, in Washington, D.C. And yeah, if anyone's in the JPL area or Pasadena area, I'll be there for the next while, for the fall anyways.
If anyone is at NASA.
Yeah, anyone at JPL. Just at NASA, if you want to hang out, like, just let me know.
I'm sure there's many people listening who are now, all of NASA is currently on their toes.
Perfect. Perfect. You'd give me a full-time gig. That'd be great.
I wish I could. That's it. That's all the questions I had. So awesome. Thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That was an awesome conversation. I'm so glad that Kelsey is open to chatting about a taboo topic like money. If you're used to talking about money, you might not even realize how taboo it is. Gabby Dunn, the host of Bad With Money, always talks about how people are more comfortable talking about their sex life than how much money they make. So of course, I'm so glad that we are opening up about it. Please, please, please check out her blog if you are a grad student. Kelsey discusses how you can ask for a raise, which, yes, is apparently sometimes possible in grad school, how to talk to your partner about money if they're not a grad student and make a lot more than you, and how to travel as a grad student. Speaking of, I wanted to mention an initiative that my pal Naomi Kobelik has started called #PayYourPhDs. Naomi is wrapping up her PhD in Sydney, Australia. The way the system works there is she has 3 years to do her PhD. Yeah, just three. She finished the 3 years and earned a competitive 6-month scholarship extension so she can continue to get paid while she wraps up her research. She recently surpassed the 6 months and, as of last month, is working for free. To clarify, she is still working full-time to earn her PhD, doing valuable research, and is not finished, but the system does not allow her to continue getting paid. This is bonkers. So Naomi started a petition that I've linked for you in the show notes to bring attention to the fact that PhD students deserve a living wage for the work they do. I encourage you to check it out and also read through the hashtag #PayYourPhDs on Twitter to learn more about other people's financial struggles in grad school. Now, I want this episode to only be the start of the conversation. I challenge you to keep the conversation going at @ScienceSucksPod on Twitter. Share your experiences and listen to the stories of others so we can continue to raise each other up. I'm Evie. I really hope you're being compensated fairly for the work that you do, and have an amazing week.